The Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
WILL programs are made possible by Women's Health Practice and Dr. Suzanne Truppen, offering obstetrics, gynecology, and fertility services. More information is available at 356-3736. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan for State of Illinois employees and is accepting new patients. Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future environment. It is part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3. We're also online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Henry Frayne is our technical director. Our monthly program on dogs with trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana is preempted today, as we'll join National Public Radio for coverage of President-elect Barack Obama's first news conference this hour. The economy is front and center as Mr. Obama takes questions from reporters this afternoon. NPR's coverage will be anchored by Linda Wertheimer and will begin at 1:20, with the news conference set to begin at 1:30. So until 1:20 this afternoon, we open the phone lines. We'd like to hear from you this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. WILL. What would you like to hear from Barack Obama this afternoon? What are your concerns about the economy? And a successor to the president-elect in the U.S. Senate, thoughts on that? The governor says he'll have a decision by the first of the year. On the lighter side, we could talk about a campaign promise Barack Obama made to his daughters, a puppy, and they are going to adopt from a shelter. So we could talk about that as well. What kind of dog should they look for? And maybe this is an appropriate question today, as usually on the first Friday of the month, we talk about dogs. Again, the phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Another thing we could talk about is Barack Obama and the hopes in the world regarding foreign policy. Coming up today on The World from PRI, many Pakistanis hope Barack Obama will end the so-called war on terror. They say the U.S. presence in Afghanistan has stirred up terrorists in their own country. So we'll have that report on Pakistan in the day's news, of course, coming up today on The World at 3 o'clock. What do you think about the war on terror, and what do you think Barack Obama's approach to that should be? Another question might be, would you like to see, do you expect to see further news conferences here from the president-elect before Inauguration Day? I think this is quite unprecedented. Is it a wise move? Why not? 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And I hope you'll join us this afternoon, because I don't know that I have too much else to say this afternoon, and we've got 10 minutes to go here until we make that join with National Public Radio. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And we've got a caller now ready to join us on line one, I believe in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm ecstatic about the election, but I'm afraid we have put a lot of pressure on this young man, and he's wonderful, and he's going to be doing a job, but I don't want him to push him and get discouraged because he's got five big issues ahead of him.
And what's at the top, do you think?
Well, I guess he's going to have to hit the economy because it, you know, doesn't help everything else. And then health care, the environment, energy, and there was another one. I can't think of it right now. But it's so good to have somebody I think is honest and it will give us a fair shake in the middle class. And I mean, I'm just very, very excited about the whole thing. I'm a caller to his office, and I said this morning and I congratulated him. And I just say things that I think are important, and they seem to listen. Hmm. And I think other people should keep their phone numbers of all three of them, Durbin and Obama and whoever takes Obama's place, and Tim Johnson, too, because if you call them, they respond very nicely, and it seems to make a difference.
Hmm.
I believe in democracy, so
yeah.
Thank you.
Well, before you go, let me ask you a question. Do you think, or is it your hope, it sounds like it is your hope, that this energized electorate will remain energized?
Oh, I hope so. But not with too much pressure. Because, I mean, these are huge problems.
Yeah.
It's never been this bad. And certainly I'm 72 years old, and it's never been that bad in my lifetime. And, I hope he's going to be, this is going to sound corny, but I hope he's going to be a combination of Abraham Lincoln and FDR.
Okay. Well, there are some great presidents there.
That's right. So, yeah, I think people will stay involved, but I hope we don't hope too much too fast because it's going to take a while.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for calling in this afternoon.
I enjoy your program very much.
Thank you. Other calls are invited. Please give us a call this afternoon and join us with your thoughts. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in Charleston on Line 4. Hi. Line 4?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Starting the night he was elected, I started asking all of my friends, what do we want to do? Now is the time to start thinking of what we want to ask President-elect Barack Obama, what we want him to do for us, because he will listen. Well, the biggest thing that I think he'll start to do for us is assemble a committee of actual scientists to help solve all the problems, as opposed to assemble lawyers who scientists had to call to make decisions. The lawyers aren't the ones we need making decisions. We need actual educated scientists and engineers to fix our energy crisis and to help us solve things, which will in turn stimulate all of our economic growth and stimulate new jobs as we find these new ways to utilize energy from the sun to the wind.
So it sounds like you're really going to be watching who he selects in his for his transition team and who his ideas are for cabinet choices are going to be.
Yes,
yeah. Well, anything else?
My biggest thing is I hope that as everybody assembled together to watch him be elected, I hope we still take what we learned through this election process and utilize it for the next 4 years. And it's up to us as citizens to take some of the burden that he has, too. I think that's key, is for us to assemble as small committees through our communities to understand some of the problems that we face.
That's an interesting idea. Well, thanks for the call.
Hey, thank you for your time.
Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I am so proud of the American people. I think it really shows how we can all come together and do a very good thing for not only our children, but for the world. And it really says a lot about America and that everyone was involved in this, and I think that's a great thing. And then on that dog.
Yeah.
It says a lot about a man, if you think about everything he's been through, all the money he's raised, all the dignitaries he's talked to, and all of that, that the first thing he says when he comes to accept the on his acceptance speech.
In Grand Park, yeah.
Yeah, he acknowledges he's going to get that dog for his two little girls, and I just thought that was really sweet.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's all I have to say.
Well,
go
thanks
America,
for the call.
Go Obama. Bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we take a call from a listener in Bloomington, Illinois. Line 2, hi.
Hello, hi. I have mixed feelings because he's already getting people from the Clinton administration who brought us NAFTA and downsizing of the Veterans Administration. Even over in Danville, VA is hurting because of they don't have enough nurses, and at Indianapolis, I've noticed. So there's like a lot of good things and then other things that's cautionary with those same Clinton people. So it's kind of good and bad.
Yeah, you mentioned veterans.
Yes.
And Tammy Duckworth has been mentioned as a possible successor.
That would be great.
In the U.S. Senate?
Because Tammy has helped veterans in Illinois a lot, and she tried to run, and even the VFW put up against her, which is against the 501c, to even be involved like that. So she has really tried and done a lot. She has done a lot for veterans in Illinois, so that would be great. So anyway,
okay.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. We have about 2-3 minutes left before we join National Public Radio for coverage of President-elect Barack Obama's first news conference. We could probably take another call, maybe 2-333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You know, one of the things I was thinking about today as I was thinking about what we might talk about in this very brief open line this afternoon is Mr. Obama's election success has been attributed in large part to his disciplined campaign. And I wonder if we'll see that discipline as a hallmark of the transition and his early months in office following his inauguration. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One more call, maybe. Line 1, good afternoon. Line 1, hi. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi there, yes. Well, I know it's not possible probably today, but certainly in the future I would like to have emphasis on energy because I think that not only is it necessary, but the economic opportunities for the country probably lie in that arena. And that would be just great if there's a push to solve that in terms of creating new jobs and technologies that will help us in the short term and the long term a lot more than an economic stimulus package that is a really short-term fix and has no real long-term consequence.
Yeah, so maybe some kind of almost like a public works program for green things?
Yeah, but I mean, wouldn't...
Yep, I think we lost the listener there. We cut out. And I'm getting some mixed signals from Master Control here this afternoon, so we've got our fingers crossed that everything will go off as planned this afternoon. Sorry we got cut off from that last caller, but I think that the energy and the environment will be key issues in this administration, in addition to the economy, healthcare, foreign policy, and the like. So that is something to keep an eye on, and we're ready to go here. It is 1:20. We join National Public Radio.
This is special coverage from NPR News, Barack Obama's first news conference as the president-elect. I'm Linda Wertheimer in Washington. In just about 10 minutes, we expect the president-elect to speak in Chicago. The likely topic, the struggling U.S. economy. New numbers from the Labor Department today show that the unemployment rate jumped to 6.5% last month. That is much worse than expected. It is a 14-year high. The president-elect met earlier today with a group of economic advisors, a team that includes Warren Buffett and former Treasury Secretaries Lawrence Summers and Robert Rubin. Voters, foreign leaders, even officials of the Bush administration are waiting to see what Obama wants to do, although he will not be sworn in until January 20th. Mr. Obama is also likely to face questions about his transition to the White House, the team he's putting together. An aide to the president-elect tells us that there will not be any new announcements about members of his administration. Today's news conference is President-elect Obama's first public appearance since his victory on Tuesday. He will be speaking from the Hilton Hotel along the Magnificent Mile in Chicago. I'm joined now by NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. Welcome, Ron.
Good to be with you, Linda.
And by NPR's economic correspondent, John Itzde.
Hi, Linda.
John, first of all, what about this meeting and all the fancy people who were speaking to Mr. Obama?
Lots of fancy people. Warren Buffett, the Wizard of Omaha, participated by speakerphone. Richard Parsons, chairman of Time Warner, was there. Anne Mulcahy, chairman and CEO of Xerox, and from the former government world, Robert Rubin and Larry Summers, both former Treasury secretaries. Paul Volcker, a former chairman of the Federal Reserve and an advisor to Obama, sat right to his left. And Roger Ferguson, now of TIA Cref, former vice chairman of the Fed, was there as well as some politicians, Jennifer Granholm, governor of Michigan, Mayor Villaraigosa of Los Angeles, all there.
So these are people who, among other things, want something. Jennifer Granholm, for example, wants Mr. Obama to, or preferably the Bush administration, to begin a bailout of the automobile industry in her home state of Michigan.
Absolutely. I would guess that among the things discussed today was the deteriorating state of the U.S. auto industry, along with all kinds of other huge problems that the economy has. Growing unemployment that we saw today, a horrible unemployment report out, falling stock markets, difficulty in credit markets. And the question is, you know, what can President-elect Obama do about those things right now, first of all?
And when he, technically speaking, has no power.
Exactly. And then what can he do once he gets into office January 20th?
Now, Nancy Pelosi, who is the Speaker of the House, has already said that she thinks that the lame duck session of Congress, lame duck meaning that that some members of this Congress have already will not be serving in the next one, that they should pass a stimulus package, a kind of down payment on a stimulus package, to be followed by a permanent tax cut to come after Mr. Obama is in office. Is this something that that you think he? I mean, can he move such a thing along?
I think he can, and I think he already is. I've talked to his economic aides in the past couple of days, and they say they are consulting with the Congress on the stimulus package. I'm sure he will let his ideas be known. And in terms of this 1-2 punch, you know, once he gets into office and you get a second stimulus package, Speaker Pelosi's talked about a tax cut. And, of course, at the top of Obama's agenda was a middle-class tax cut. So you can see that working very well.
Now, one of the people who was in the room with Mr. Obama, at least one of the people in that room, was Larry Summers, who might very well be the next Treasury Secretary and have a great deal to say. The next Treasury Secretary obviously will have a great deal to say about what sort of economic stimulus package there might be or what the economic program will look like. Do you have any sense of who Mr. Obama likes for Treasury Secretary?
Well, the three names that are mentioned most often and which aides to Obama acknowledge are under consideration are a former Treasury Secretary Summers, the current president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Tim Geithner, who's been very involved in the financial rescue over the past few months, and Paul Volcker, a name from the past, former chairman of the Federal Reserve Board during a very, very difficult economic time back in the 1980s. I think those three are at the top of the list.
And, of course, they're all extraordinarily distinguished people. So, Ron Elving, one of the things that has always that has often happened with presidents is that they start out, they're very, you know, they're going gangbusters. They're gonna appoint the people that are going to be in their cabinet. They're going to give us the shape of the government to come and whatnot. Mr. Obama, the first talk, of course, is about the Secretary of the Treasury. But what do you think? Do you think he's likely to move quickly on this stuff?
I do think he's going to move relatively quickly. He has already appointed a chief of staff, which is a decision that was not made for some time after, for example, Bill Clinton became president in 1992. That seemed to be one that they put off for quite a long time, didn't seem to regard it as one of the paramount choices the president had to make. And in this case, by turning over to Rahm Emanuel the reins of this transition, now there's a separate transition team, and he does not actually become White House Chief of Staff until January 20th when Barack Obama becomes the president. But if you introduce Rahm Emanuel as an element into any kind of a situation, he is going to change it and change it fast. That is the nature of Rahm Emanuel. And so whatever pace Barack Obama and some of his other advisors might have had in mind a week ago, that pace is going to quicken considerably.
Rahm Emanuel is a congressman from Chicago. He was a member of the Clinton administration's, President Clinton's personal staff, and he served he had a title, but what he really was the recruiter for Democrats who were running for the House of Representatives.
In 2006, he served as the chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC, sometimes called the D-Triple or even the D-Trip. And Rahm Emanuel took on that job and said, we're going to be the majority party now. I'm going to go out and recruit 50 or 60 candidates. I'm going to fund them. And what's more, if I have other candidates who want to run in those districts, I don't think would be as good for the Democrats, I'm going to see to it those candidacies do not go forward, and I will promote the people I think will win. And in many cases, they were people who were not necessarily agreeing with Rahm Emanuel on the issues, but he thought they were better suited to win in an Alabama or a Georgia or a Louisiana, for example. And he did that. He did it very well, and they picked up 30 seats, and as a result, they became the majority party. Now, of course, there were circumstances, the Iraq War, the lessening popularity of George W. Bush, that helped that 2006 transition take place. But the guy who really drove the train, the guy who really ran that operation was Rahm Emanuel.
And of course, the Democrats have done surprisingly, I thought, well in this election, because we were all assuming that there were so many seats which were basically safe that it would be hard for the Democrats to make the kind of progress that they made in 2006, but they did very well.
I would have said that 190, maybe 185, would really be the absolute limit, of the absolute floor for the House Republican caucus to get down to. And they were already at 199. So I couldn't see them going down much more than 10 or 15. That was until a few months ago. Now, when Emanuel moved on from running the D-Triple, he gave it to his deputy, and his deputy, who stepped right in, Chris Van Hollen, a relatively youthful congressman from Maryland, stepped right in, carried on the Emanuel methods, and they picked up at least another 20 seats in this election this week. So now together, these two elections, they picked up more than 50 seats and eradicated what the Republicans did in 1994.
So do you have any expectations of what we're going to hear from Mr. Obama today about his political plans, his appointment plans, he said he's not going to announce appointments, but...
No, we're not going to hear any big appointments. I don't think we're going to hear any terribly concrete plans about the economy. The man is not president yet, but I think he does know that the world, as well as our country, is looking to him for some sort of exhortation to get us all a little bit more confident in our economic future. And that's the kind of thing that he does well. That's the kind of thing that carried him so rapidly through the political ranks from the Illinois state legislature just 4 years ago to where he is now, poised on the brink of being the leader of the free world.
We expect to see Mr. Obama soon at the Hilton Hotel in Chicago. But, John, while we're waiting for that to happen, can this new president-elect exert any kind of influence on things like the markets, which have been just incredibly agitated in the last couple of days?
You know, I think he can in terms of his choice for Treasury Secretary. If he names someone that the markets are comfortable with, I think that's helpful. On the other hand, I don't think he should be rushed to it by falling markets, because if markets fall— You know, you can explain falling markets as responding not having a Treasury Secretary one day, and you name that Treasury Secretary, and the next day they fall again, and there's another reason. So I think, you know, Obama should work with all deliberate speed on this, and I think we'll probably see a Treasury Secretary within the next 2 weeks, but not today, not tomorrow.
But what about just coming out, talking, giving people a glimpse of the president-elect and what he might be thinking about? I mean, does that – Mr. Obama certainly is a very calm sort of person. I think we're right on the edge of being able to hear from him.
Mm-hmm.
We have not yet had the 2-minute warning. Is that do I understand that? So he may be as much as a quarter of an hour late. So this is more time for us to talk.
Well, in response to your question, I think he has to be careful because political protocol and the fact of the matter is, he's not the president yet. He has to be careful not to undercut the policies of the current administration or the Congress, people who were elected to do this business. I think what he needs to do is maybe talk in very general terms about what kind of broad stimulus package he might think is useful in concert with his consultation with members of Congress. And lay things out that way, but mostly I think work behind the scenes, but make it known that he's working behind the scenes.
Ron, we've got more than one transition going on here. One of the things that is happening here in Washington, speaking of behind the scenes, this is a sort of thing that can be very important, but it involves a lot of people that most of the people in the United States have not even heard of, and that is to say that all of the leadership positions in the Republican Party are shaking and quaking at this moment while the Republicans try to figure out what they want to do, including the high-profile chairman of the party and the leadership in the House.
That's right. And traditionally, when either party has as bad an election as the Republicans had in 2006, the leader of that party steps down as the leader. And that's what Denny Hastert did. He was the Speaker of the House, actually had been Speaker for 8 years. And in 2006, when they lost those 30 seats and dropped out of the majority status, Denny Hastert stepped aside. He said, I won't leave Congress. I'll serve my district, but I will no longer stand to be the leader of my party. And, of course, there was kind of a general sigh of relief. And they went on to choose his former number two, John Boehner, to be their new leader. Well, now we're 2 years later, and John Boehner has presided over two-thirds as great a disaster. And his number two, Roy Blunt of Missouri, has already said, all right, I'm out of here. And he's stepped out. And the number three person in the leadership, Adam Putnam, said, I can read the handwriting on the wall. And he stepped out. But John Boehner of Ohio has said, I think this wasn't my fault. I don't think I should be asked to step down just because we lost another 20 seats. I mean, there were a lot of things at work here. We had the unpopularity of George W. Bush. We had the phenomenon of Barack Obama. We didn't do a very good job of recruiting candidates, perhaps, but who could have in an atmosphere like this with the economy in free fall and the wars that were unpopular? So he is saying, look, I'm prepared to take the reins again in this difficult time and lead the Republican Party back. And so far, no one has stepped up.
No other volunteers.
And said, no, John, I want those reins in this incredibly difficult period of time for the Republican Party. So it is possible he will return as the Republican leader in the House.
So that's another transition to sort of keep an eye on while the Democrats are trying to put together, as the president-elect is trying to put together a new cabinet and decide what he's going to do. Now, both of you, this is the first time that Barack Obama will have met with the press since he was elected president. This is one of those kinds of news conferences where the man stands up at the front and takes questions and he doesn't know what they're going to be. It's a bit of a command performance, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't this something that the American people have seen? Some presidents are good at it and some presidents are not so good.
And what we have seen in this campaign is that it's not really the métier of Barack Obama. He is a great speaker, no question about it, a great orator. He was somewhat less effective in debates and less effective yet in press settings. And that's part of the reason we haven't seen much of him in the fall. Neither he nor Joe Biden liked to come back on the airplane and banter with the reporters. And they have not had a lot of news conferences of the kind that we're going to see today. So this is really going to be new for a lot of the people who have been reporting on his campaign day by day to see him in this kind of a setting.
He's been briefed on all sorts of subjects by the by among other things, national security advisors have gone out to Chicago to talk to him and tell him every terrible thing that they know about the insecure places in the world that will be part of his brief.
Yes, well, senators get briefings regularly, and members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, like Barack Obama, get briefings regularly. Candidates for president get excellent briefings from the National Security Agency and are brought into the loop to some degree. But I suspect that only presidents really ultimately get brought into the loop, and I suspect further that even president-elects are not quite all the way in. But he's a good bit further in than he was a week ago, and he may be learning realities that he had not glimpsed.
But I think it's going to be a difficult press conference because he's going to be asked for some concrete ideas about what to do about the economy now.
And what to do about Iraq now.
And what to do about Iraq now. And, you know, he is not yet president, and I think he can lay things out broadly, but it's going to be difficult if he starts to wade into the weeds and give specific answers. Just one other thing that he I'm sure he'll be asked whether he's going to attend this meeting of the G20 heads of government here in Washington next week on the world economy. It'll be George Bush's last big international meeting. And there's been some discussion with the Obama campaign, not campaign,
transition team
mm-hmm. about whether he might attend or whether some aides might attend. And we'll find more out about that, I guess.
David Shaper is watching this or will be watching this news conference from the vantage point of the Chicago Hilton and Towers. He's our reporter on the scene. David, you're looking at is this the same campaign press corps or has this changed? Are we now looking at the White House press corps?
Well, it has changed somewhat. There have been a lot of reporters coming from the White House press corps, although many of them were on the campaign trail with Senator Obama. But the interesting thing is you have a huge contingent of local media here as well, international media who are here. Covering the election night, and it's quite an interesting mix, actually. And I think that they all have somewhat different perspectives of how they want to cover the president-elect with questions. A lot of local interest in who might be going to Washington from Chicago. We already know Rahm Emanuel is going, but there's a lot of speculation about former Commerce Secretary William Daley, for example, and other members of our congressional delegation here, and other leadership from our Chicago public schools.
So people who are old friends and old colleagues from Chicago, how many of the, what I'm sure we will learn to call the Chicago Mafia, will come into the campaign. David, what about Mr. Obama? What has he been up to in the last day and a half?
He's been keeping things relatively low-key. This morning he went to his daughter's school and had a parent-teacher conference with his wife, Michelle, and the teachers for Sasha and Malia. He's gone to the gym a couple of times, played a little basketball on election day. But he's not doing anything in a very public fashion, keeping the press quite at bay. There is a group of pool reporters who follow him everywhere he goes now, and that's something he needs to get a little more used to. They did this on the campaign, but not to the degree he has the media following him.
Right. He will never be out of sight of the press if the press can help it.
Not at all. And it's already seems to be annoying him to some degree. There's an incident on the night of Halloween when he tried to take one of his daughters to a neighborhood Halloween party and a TV crew he thought got too close. And he's got some adjusting to do in that role, and the city of Chicago does too. We heard about a car that tried to pass his motorcade, not really knowing what it was, yesterday on a street downtown Chicago when he was going to the federal building
right. For
a briefing with the FBI. And four people had just, you know, Secret Service cut them off and guns drawn as they tried to just motor around.
I'm sure that you in Chicago will learn to love motorcades the way we in Washington have learned to love them, which is not at all, because they do slow things down. Let me ask you about one of the things that I assume that he will be asked today is school. Where are the girls going to go to school? Has anybody said anything about it?
I know that they're exploring their options, and they have some studying to do. I wouldn't be surprised if they when they visit the White House on Monday, if they do try to check out some of the schools in the area and explore what options are available to them. It's something quite a few presidents have had to do over history. But, you know, times change and schools change. The Obama girls are in a private school here in Chicago, the University of Chicago's lab school with an excellent reputation. But it's in their neighborhood as well, and I know that they like the proximity of being able to walk the girls to school and things like that, things that they'll never be able to do again in their lives. So there's going to be quite an adjustment for the entire family as they go to Washington.
Now, David, you be sure and tell us if you see him before we see him. But let me ask you, Ron Elving, generally speaking, what about the relationship of this president-elect to the press? There's been a lot of talk about that the press was basically had fallen in love with him, and a lot of sort of hostile talk from other campaigns.
This really broke into the open in March when he was still battling Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination. And while it had been widely observed, certainly many conservatives had complained about it, just between him and Hillary Clinton, there was a perceived favoring of Senator Obama. And so when Saturday Night Live came out with a skit that really went straight at this and poked fun at reporters for being reverential towards Barack Obama and dismissive of Hillary Clinton, it really struck a chord, and it really changed the campaign.
There were questions like... Do you have everything you want? Would you like a glass of water?
Yeah, exactly. Could you just explain to us why you're so great and that sort of thing? And it was humorous, and everyone seemed to get the joke, and no one seemed to really question that there was a basis for the joke, and it changed the way the press treated him and the way they treated Hillary Clinton for some weeks thereafter. Not necessarily because of that, but coincidentally, in the weeks ahead, Hillary Clinton began to win, and Barack Obama began to lose in some pretty big states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, Kentucky, West Virginia, and his nomination was endangered for a period of time. I think the campaign has been wary of the press in a way it was not necessarily wary of the press prior to that ever since.
So when we see Mr. Obama answering these questions— he must obviously be aware that there will be some questions that are going to not be all that friendly.
You know, 5 minutes.
I think we've just heard David Shaper. Did I just hear a 5-minute warning?
5 minutes, correct.
Okay. Well, we will keep that in mind.
Linda, I think one of the questions today actually is how much of a honeymoon do you get, and how much does this economic crisis affect the tone? And the sharpness of the questions that a president-elect gets now. I mean, often with the president-elect, you'll get questions like, you know, how does it feel, sort of? and, you know, are you going to bring a dog to the White House? And those sorts of things. And I think people are, you know, the news is right in our face right now. And I think that may change the tone of this press conference.
Now, we did not hear from Mr. Obama the day after he was elected. That's a little bit unusual. You generally do expect for the president-elect to come out, you know, virtually as soon as he wakes up and say a few words. He didn't do that.
Well, he didn't do it the first day, and he didn't do it the second day. I would have expected this news conference to be 24 hours ago or even 48 hours ago. But again, this is not the Barack Obama style. The Barack Obama style has been aloof from the press. And maybe you could call it cool. Maybe you could call it distant. You could call it defensive. We could keep moving in the direction of less flattering adjectives. I think at some point you wind up with secretive. And that is not going to be the way to succeed in making his transition to Washington, if past experience is any guide. There was much the same sort of hold the press at arm's length attitude among the Clinton people when they first got to town in 92 and 93. His first director of communications made quite a point of lecturing White House correspondents of some long standing that they were no longer really the point, and that Clinton was going to go right over their heads and right back to the local television stations in their hometowns and ignore them. That was not a good way to build relations with what became a very hostile White House press corps.
One of the things that always makes the White House press corps hostile is lack of access. If they don't see the president very often, then they get really grumpy. And this is obviously not something that anybody but the press corps cares about, really. But
it can affect the coverage.
And I think that one of the questions that, that no doubt the president or his press secretary will get early on after he's sworn in is, will there be weekly news conferences? Mm-hmm.
Right. I think there'll be that question, and the answer will probably be no, if I have any indication from the attitude the campaign has shown up to now. They may put people out to talk about various and sundry issues, but whether or not the press is going to get weekly access to Barack Obama, I think that's highly unlikely. One thing we're learning about Barack Obama this afternoon is that he's a little bit more like Bill Clinton in terms of his punctuality
exactly.
than he is like George
Democratic
W. Bush,
time.
Who used to come out 30 seconds or 90 seconds before the time he was supposed to come out.
What I've heard about Mr. Obama and the way he likes to do things is that when he has a table of people that he's consulting about something, that the very last thing he does is he goes around that table and he asks for each person to say their last words, you know, is there anything else that you want to add? And he goes right around the table and will not take a pass. You know, you've got to speak. And it would be interesting to know if that's what's happening in that meeting. If
you can't
he's,
say, I agree with Mr. Volcker.
What he said.
What he said, exactly.
but the other thing that happens is that the White House press corps personnel changes from one White House to the next. Generally speaking, those people who covered the candidate are assumed to have some kind of special access to the staff. At least they know him when they see him, and the other way around. And you frequently see campaign people moving into maybe the number two or sometimes the number one position for the various news organizations in the White House.
Yes, that's true. That's traditional. And it does create a certain expectation that you have the goodwill of the candidate and that the candidate in some sense or another will call on you and recognize you and that there would be a conduit. But again, this has not been a campaign that has gone out of its way to build up that kind of relationship. That, I think, smacks of an earlier era, an era that may have been better or worse for the country's point of view, but an era in which reporters and the people around a presidential candidate and then a president were a little chummier, were a little more trusting of each other, were perhaps too close to each other.
It'll be interesting to see whether the discipline that the Obama campaign maintained in terms of its messaging and its access to the press goes into the White House along with it. I mean, they were pretty skilled at staying on message and not having leaks and limiting access. So it could be interesting.
The only person who's been fairly freely made available to kind of out of the ordinary interviews has been Mrs. Obama, who has appeared on various national television programs, and none of which are necessarily known for being hard hitting. But still, she's been out there on daytime TV. Talking to people like Regis and
she's
Love
very
you.
Close to the president, I understand.
it is just this period, you know, when we are all waiting to see a new president and how it's going to go for him and what is going to happen and what is he going to be able to do in this first period and try to get to know him. This is all, you know, I think this is an interesting and exciting time. And it's also interesting because he is replacing a president who is not at all popular.
You know, one thing that I think is possible is that he may be able to enact his parts of his agenda much more quickly than he would have because of this, the economic problems we're facing. A lot of people have said deficits will constrain his program. But I would think we're going to get this middle-class tax cut right away as part of a stimulus package. Some of his infrastructure and alternative energy programs could be rolled into a stimulus package because they'll create jobs. So it could affect, you know, what comes first and what comes second, and he could get a lot of this agenda very quickly.
I think it's generally speaking very important for presidents to try to move as fast as they can. Isn't that right, Ron?
Absolutely, especially if there is a crisis mentality and a sense that with this new president came a lot of new members of Congress, particularly in the Senate, which is usually the tougher weight to drag whenever you're trying to move a piece of legislation. Now you're going to have 57 or 56 plus one or whatever you want to call them, 57 votes more or less for Barack Obama's program in the Democratic Conference in the Senate.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second and so that David Shaper, thank you very much for joining us. You get back to your seat and get ready, because as we understand it, we're just a little more than a minute out, and some of the people that were in that meeting, I believe, some of the people who we may be seeing more of in the course of this transition, have come out to stand behind where Mr. Obama will be speaking at the Hilton.
We can see Paul Volcker there and Richard Parsons.
Robert
there.
Reich, I see.
Robert
and
Reich,
there's Larry Summers, former president of Harvard, as well as the former...
Laura Tyson, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors.
Robert Rubin is also there among the august company.
So this is a very distinguished group of folks that the president-elect has gathered for purposes of having this first discussion about the economy. And presumably, since not only did he have this meeting, but he's also gathered them all beside to stand on the stage, I think we can infer that the economy is going to be a major topic of this discussion. Although, the American press is not necessarily controllable, so presumably they will say whatever, they will ask him whatever they want to know, and then that will also be a very interesting part of this whole setup. Barack Obama spoke in Chicago at Grant Park. Many, many thousands of people. On the evening of his election, it was not even that late because the election was decided relatively early, and that was the last. Those were just about the last words we heard from him. And this will be the first moment that we will be able to hear from the new president. Presumably he'll have an opening statement, say a few words to us, and then he will take some questions. But he's standing behind he will stand behind a podium that just simply says, President-elect. There is no official seal of the
no
sort that we...
No presidential seal, right?
here is Mr. Obama. He's...
Hi, guys. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very much. This morning we woke up to more sobering news about the state of our economy. The 240,000 jobs lost in October marks the 10th consecutive month that our economy has shed jobs. In total, we've lost nearly 1.2 million jobs this year, and more than 10 million Americans are now unemployed. Tens of millions of families are struggling to figure out how to pay the bills and stay in their homes. Their stories are an urgent reminder that we are facing the greatest economic challenge of our lifetime, and we're going to have to act swiftly to resolve it. Now, the United States has only one government and one president at a time. And until January 20th of next year, that government is the current administration. I've spoken to President Bush. I appreciate his commitment to ensuring that his economic policy team keeps us fully informed as developments unfold. And I'm also thankful for his invitation to the White House. Immediately after I become president, I'm going to confront this economic crisis head on by taking all necessary steps to ease the credit crisis, help hardworking families, and restore growth and prosperity. This morning, I met with members of my Transition Economic Advisory Board, who are standing behind me alongside my Vice President-elect Joe Biden. They will help to guide the work of my transition team, working with Rahm Emanuel, chief of staff, in developing a strong set of policies to respond to this crisis. We discussed in the earlier meeting several of the most immediate challenges facing our economy and key priorities on which to focus on in the days and weeks ahead. First of all, we need a rescue plan for the middle class that invests in immediate efforts to create jobs and provide relief to families that are watching their paycheck shrink and their life savings disappear. A particularly urgent priority is a further extension of unemployment insurance benefits for workers who cannot find work in the increasingly weak economy. A fiscal stimulus plan that will jumpstart economic growth is long overdue. I've talked about it throughout the last few months of the campaign. we should get it done. Second, we have to address the spreading impact of the financial crisis on the other sectors of our economy. Small businesses that are struggling to meet their payrolls and finance their holiday inventories, and state and municipal governments facing devastating budget cuts and tax increases. We must also remember that the financial crisis is increasingly global and requires a global response. The news coming out of the auto industry this week reminds us of the hardship it faces, hardship that goes far beyond individual auto companies to the countless suppliers, small businesses, and communities throughout our nation who depend on a vibrant American auto industry. The auto industry is the backbone of American manufacturing and a critical part of our attempt to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. I would like to see the administration do everything it can to accelerate the retooling assistance that Congress has already enacted. In addition, I've made it a high priority for my transition team to work on additional policy options to help the auto industry adjust, weather the financial crisis, and succeed in producing fuel-efficient cars here in the United States of America. And I was glad to be joined today by Governor Jennifer Granholm, who obviously has great knowledge and great interest on this issue. I've asked my team to explore what we can do under current law and whether additional legislation will be needed for this purpose. Third, we will review the implementation of this administration's financial program to ensure that the government's efforts are achieving their central goal of stabilizing financial markets while protecting taxpayers, helping homeowners, and not unduly rewarding the management of financial firms that are receiving government assistance. It is absolutely critical that the Treasury work closely with the FDIC, HUD, and other government agencies to use the substantial authority that they already have to help families avoid foreclosure and stay in their homes. Finally, as we monitor and address these immediate economic challenges, we will be moving forward in laying out a set of policies that will grow our middle class and strengthen our economy in the long term. We cannot afford to wait on moving forward on the key priorities that I identified during the campaign, including clean energy, health care, education, and tax relief for middle-class families. My transition team will be working on each of these priorities in the weeks ahead, and I intend to reconvene this advisory board to discuss the best ideas for responding to these immediate problems. Let me close by saying this. I do not underestimate the enormity of the task that lies ahead. We have taken some major action to date, and we will need further action during this transition and subsequent months. Some of the choices that we make are going to be difficult. And I have said before, and I will repeat again, it is not going to be quick, and it is not going to be easy for us to dig ourselves out of the hole that we are in. But America is a strong and resilient country, and I know we will succeed if we put aside partisanship and politics and work together as one nation. That's what I intend to do. With that, let me open it up for some questions, and I'm going to start right here with you, Nedra.
Thank you, Mr. President-elect. I wonder what you think any president can accomplish during their first 100 days in office to turn the economy around. How far can you go, and what will be your priorities on day one?
Well, I think that a new president can do an enormous amount to restore confidence, to move an agenda forward that speaks to the needs of the economy and the needs of middle-class families all across the country. I've outlined during the course of the campaign some critical issues that I intend to work on. We have a current financial crisis that is spilling out into the rest of the economy, and we have taken some action so far. More action is undoubtedly going to be needed. My transition team is going to be monitoring very closely what happens over the course of the next several months. The one thing I can say with certainty is that we are going to need to see a stimulus package passed either before or after inauguration. We are going to have to focus on jobs because